Hello, it is Coin Talk, the show of Bitcoin sadness and occasional joy. We've been doing this for a while. I don't know how long you've been listening, but thanks for listening. We hadn't actually launched the show yet, but the first 1 year anniversary of Jay and I wasting an entire day talking about something crypto related happened recently, and that was the anniversary of the Bcash fork. We were both able to remember definitively that we were taping some basement tapes then, and the show was in its infant stages. So what we decided to do was do a year in review and talk over the year between the Bcash fork, which was August 2017, and the 1 year anniversary of the Bcash fork, which is this month, August 2018. Everything that happened, the winners, the losers, the sad, the terrible, where everything landed. I hope you enjoy it. We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. Hey, if you read stuff on Medium, and I don't know how you could be interested in crypto and not read stuff on Medium, then consider becoming a member. It's $5 a month. It supports writers. It supports the good people at Medium. And it helps support things like this show. Here is that show. Oh, and if you'd like to sponsor this show, it would really help us out. It's a hi at cointalk.show. Send me an email and I will send you info. Okay, here we go.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, August 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $6,080.
Hey, welcome to Coin Talk. Jay, hello.
Hello. It's actually been a while, even though it doesn't seem like
we've been like staggering a few shows. We did a mailbag show. It's been a while since we've been talking about the news of the day.
The listeners cannot see us, but I want them to know that you're wearing white plastic Birkenstocks right
well,
now.
Well, I'm going to tell you. So I got these Birkenstocks because, as people know, there's often water on the floor of the crypto cave. And I fell in love with them. I never thought I'd fall in love with some Birkenstocks, but I fell in love with them. And then I was coming down here and I slid this giant metal door we have here over my foot and it ripped off one of my toenails.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's the Band-Aid you see there.
Ugh.
So these Birkenstocks are a cautionary tale.
So the Birkenstock provideth and the Birkenstock taketh away.
Speaking of cautionary tales, I want to talk today. Today is a history class.
Okay.
I think we're going to do a little history. And the reason I bring up history, well, I don't know if you've noticed, it's been about a year since we started doing this, coming down to this basement and talking about crypto.
Oh my God.
I know, it's depressing.
Yeah.
There was a long kind of intermittent basement tape period. But I remember...
Those were the salad days.
I'm starting to remember right now, like, stuff that had... Like, the one-year anniversaries are coming up, and I'm like, oh, I remember that time.
That
and the big
true.
One was the Bcash fork.
Yeah.
And so that was August 1st, 2017. They just celebrated the 1 year. We're a few days past this, but I guess they threw the party in London a few days after it. So I started seeing the news stories about the Bcash party for the 1 year anniversary of Bcash. And I was like, wow, that was a year ago. That was probably the biggest night during our crypto run. That was like the biggest single event.
During the last year?
I think so, yeah. What do you think?
Whew.
I guess the crash was the biggest event, the spike in the crash, but in terms of things that happened in one day?
I don't know. I will say the most enraptured I was with crypto and the most stuck in, where I was checking my phone every 4 seconds and where I was like, felt like I had lost my mind, but also that maybe I was going to be extremely rich, was the other fork. So if you remember the 2X fork, when it didn't happen.
That was the fake out.
Yeah, when it got canceled.
Yeah.
But then it led to like 3 to 4 days of insane drama where Roger Ver was like firing all of his Bitcoin money into Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah.
Where there was a lot of things happening with price manipulation. And it seemed like there was a battle for the soul of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That I think was as big as the Bcash, but I wouldn't say it was bigger. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that I think that was the only other day where it was a similar scale.
Well, I feel like that's all part of the same narrative in my mind.
But and they were months apart.
They were months apart. When was the other one? Do you remember?
I think it was like November or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the really crazy thing about the Bcash fork was if it had succeeded and I think we both gave it some chance of succeeding.
Yeah.
It would have radically altered the entire landscape to the point where, I mean, there's nothing bigger that could have happened.
Okay. Here's a question then. I agree with you that something, that it would have changed everything.
Yeah.
Do you think it would have been for the better or for the worse? Because I think like 3 months ago, we would not have hesitated at all. And we would have been like, oh, please. You know, of course it's for the worse. But, you know, like if you think about some of the, like, could things have gone worse than what happened to crypto?
Oh, I definitely think it could have gone worse. Because I don't think we would have ever seen the same spec. I mean, if you look at the leadership of the people who became the faces of the Bcash movement, I don't think you would elect these people dog catcher. I mean, I really don't think, I think no, I mean, dog catcher, no leaders dog is
dog
better.
Dog catcher is like a pretty important job that requires somebody to be kind of humane.
I don't really feel like the Bcash faction has advanced any narrative that would suggest they would have done any better than the core team, other than they were robbed. They stole the name.
Yeah,
the election was in some way rigged. I mean, it feels actually like a pretty thrilling case of democracy that it worked at all. Well, at that point, I thought there was a third outcome, which was that it would destroy both.
Okay, so a year later,
yeah,
after the Bcash fork, what do you think the actual ramifications of it were?
Well, it proved that a fork wouldn't destroy Bitcoin. And I think that was like the biggest atomic threat. Yeah, I mean, look, there still could be one that destroys it, but there could have been mass chaos. If both chains had ended up kind of 50-50 and there was a real fight for dominance, I think it could have brought the whole thing down. So I would say a bullet was dodged in my reading of history.
I disagree with you.
Tell me your reading.
I think that it was extremely bad.
Huh.
And I think the ramifications were extremely damaging to crypto. I think that it took what was at that point a somewhat artificially, but still seemingly anonymous project, right? That was the work of a lot of different people working together in the sense that, you know, under the vision of Satoshi. And it introduced a lot of figures who were fighting with one another and acting like fucking crazy people, you know? And between that and the 2x fork, it's not all Roger Ver's fault, you know, like Craig Wright was involved. I don't think that even the core people reacted particularly well, but it made it seem like Bitcoin itself, you know, was run by a bunch of crazy, libertarian, selfish, objectivist, however you want to put it, but people who were only really after their own self-interest and were much more evangelists and like, you know, like than I think a lot of the public was willing to stomach. And I think that it really did a lot of damage, you know? I mean, I think that everything all the way up to, like, the way that Bcash or Bitcoin Cash was released on Coinbase, you know? Having these forks really did sort of muddy the water a little bit, and I think that it really did have a bad effect overall.
But this all happened right before the lead-up to the bull run.
What did?
The fork. I mean, like, the price action in the wake of the Bcash fork and the 2x fork was positive. You're just saying in the long run,
yeah,
we're right back where we started.
Yeah, and also and this is a hot take that I'm going to bring here.
Yeah.
I am not convinced that the run up to 19,000 or 16,000, depending on the exchange. I am now the thought that maybe that was extremely fake. Like, I don't think it was particularly real or based on real speculation.
Well, this
and hype.
This is a hot take, but it's not a new take from you. You've been espousing versions of this idea for a while.
I know, but I'm locking it in.
You're locking it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we've used the Barry Bonds home run analogy before. Yeah. So there's some sort of an unweighted Barry Bonds like home run total, which is like he should have hit 612 home runs. Where do you like? What do you think the unweighted top of Bitcoin
is? So there was a second baseman for the Seattle Mariners in 2001 named Brett Boone. And Brett Boone, like for his entire career, was a slap-hitting like second baseman. And then he showed up around 2000 with like 40 more pounds of muscle, and he looked like a fucking, like it was a joke. He looked like a gigantic swollen testicle and like picked up a bat or something. And that year, Brett Boone hit 37 home runs and had like one of the greatest seasons that a second baseman has ever had offensively. Obviously was on steroids. Obviously. all the performance enhancements were because he was so maxed out on steroids. I feel like it's closer to that.
Okay, so you feel like, looking back on that moment, most of the gains from there forward were manipulated.
Yeah, or money laundering related. But I don't think it was people trying to invest in a product and that price going up because people were investing in the product.
So what you're saying is I am one of the only people who was actually buying crypto above $10,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish you had been more sure about that at the time.
I wish I had been more sure at the time, too. You're not the only one in the crypto game right now who bought Bitcoin at above $10,000. Anyway, the only reason I bring it up is not to rehash an old take, but is to really just say that I don't necessarily think that, you know, the fact that Bitcoin's bull run came after the Bcash fork and the 2x fork, like, I don't think that is probably like a correlation, not causation type of thing.
I'm willing to buy that. And I'm also willing to buy that it's not a total zero sum game. Like, Bitcoin Cash has been fairly, like, you know, I mean, it's down like everything else, but like it's got some solid value to it now. It's not like totally unholdable. One thing I'd like to talk about later is that Bitmain, in their IPO prospectus, I mistakenly in a previous show thought that they were actually on the verge of an IPO. They're not. They were on the verge of releasing the materials for the IPO, but had to reveal their holdings.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to learn that their biggest holding is Bcash.
Oh, so
they own 6% of the world's Bcash, and they own more Bcash than they possibly could have mined. So they have been trading Bitcoin for Bcash.
Huh.
Or something for Bcash.
Did they explain why?
They did not explain.
They had
strategy.
No explanation for why they had 6% of the world's Bcash.
This article like made several sort of leaps. One was, well, they have almost no Ethereum. That sort of makes sense because Ethereum is mostly GPU mined, yeah, and they specialize in ASIC mining. And that they've been selling off Bitcoin to pay for their own expenses. They've been selling off millions and millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. But what they seem to be hodling is the world. They have more Bcash than the Satoshi stash worth of Bcash.
Hmm.
And to me, that sounds like kind of bullish for Bcash and well, kind of bearish for Ethereum.
It means there's a floor, right? If
sure.
I mean, unless they start selling it off, but like, you know, it doesn't seem like.
I mean, the only narrative that the Bcash crowd has advanced that has caught my imagination at all, other than like you stole our name, is the idea that.
What about bigger blocks?
Well, bigger, like, but bigger blocks leading to what was that, like, there is going to be some microtransaction boom that's going to be outside of the current network of Bitcoin that is going to be, you know, banking the unbanked, et cetera, small, like, market level microtransactions. If I actually heard that was happening, that would be an interesting narrative to follow. What do you think?
I don't think the fight between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash is over either. I mean, I don't. If one of them is backed by the most powerful man in crypto to the tune of 1 million units of that coin, you know, like he has a million Bitcoin Cash, right? So 6% of all the Bitcoin Cash in the world right now. That means a lot more than I think, you know, like 5,000 dudes on Twitter making fun of Bcash, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's like, well, you know, you guys can say all you want about like who's cool and what's and who's not cool and what's real and what's not real. But the reality of it is that this most powerful person in crypto is very invested in having Bitcoin Cash succeed. And so I think at that point, you know, it's almost impossible to say that Bitcoin Cash is dead. I mean, you know, I think that it is probably doing a lot better than a lot of the other altcoins, right?
Well, I mean, when we really look at like the three coins we've talked about, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash, over that same year that we're discussing, Ethereum nearly flat. I think today, actually, Ethereum dropping to like 280 has crossed into down over that year.
Because
when we were getting into crypto, Ethereum was hovering around $300.
Yeah. So let's transition then. Let's talk about the year Ethereum had.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that it just like the Bcash thing, I think it's an interesting frame for the way in which crypto went, right?
And
it shows different life cycles because You're right. When you and I started talking about crypto, I think the first Ethereum purchase I made was around 330.
Yeah.
You know, and then it went up to 500. And I had bought and sold a ton both ways, generally buying the tops and selling the bottoms, you know. Yeah. But at some point, I had struggled across the line to around 500 with some Ethereum. And at the time, there were people, remember, like, people would be like, oh, yeah, you know, Bitcoin is old news. The new thing is Ethereum. People still saying that sort of thing back then. Vitalik was all over the place, like, not in terms of, like, he was scattered, but in terms of he was always out there. People were talking about him a lot.
On the cover of many magazines.
Yeah, big, like, Wired profiles, big major magazines were talking about him. And then, you know, Ethereum's price did not seem to really ever unlock itself from the Bitcoin price, you know?
Yep. Until it was on its way down.
Yeah.
Then it decided to disentangle itself from the Bitcoin price.
So Vitalik is very outspoken, saying that he doesn't care about the price. He wishes people would stop talking about the price. He wishes they would talk about the tech adoption and the culture around crypto, right? Especially his project. Do you feel like now that we are a year gone and Ethereum price is lower, let's not talk about the price at all.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the status of Ethereum, the project. Do you think it is advanced or regressed?
I think that people are not going to talk about the technology and culture of Ethereum unless Ethereum's price is going up.
Okay, okay.
So because there's not any technology or to really show off. I mean, maybe Augur, we're getting it just at the very end of the year.
Or CryptoKitties.
Or CryptoKitties, we've had a few. So I feel like we've had a light drizzle of Ethereum interesting stuff, but not enough stuff to hold people's attention for a year.
Okay. And
so in some ways, I think the trading, the exchanges, and the price have to hold the interest until the products can arrive. And that was going better when Ethereum was pushing up towards $1,000.
Or $1,500.
And is now, I would say, you know, dampened.
Okay. I don't think I quite agree with you in the sense that it was always going to be that way. Maybe that's not what you're really saying. But I think that if Ethereum had launched a lot of products this year and that those products had worked, unlike Augur, you know, which does not work.
We did log on and cash out our bet, though. I just want to say that.
Okay, how many days did it take?
It took like a week.
to log on once.
We've also been seeing some action on the P-tape market. Just want to keep the people updated.
Okay, but like the way in which Augur, and this is, look, I actually don't care. Like, I'll slander Augur. Like, the way that it works, like the level of functionality that they launched with is like, it's like shameful. Like, it's a terrible product right now.
I think it's a product that's in a beta that doesn't, I mean, you may have like a slightly lower tolerance than I do
for open source
software development and things that are in progress.
But it's not a video game or like a app that you don't need. It's something where they very actively asked for people to put money into their system and then could not even start to maintain it.
But this is basically how crypto products get developed. They're almost unusable at the beginning. Bitcoin was almost unusable as a network at the beginning, and people iterate and improve upon it, and it gets better.
Yeah, but they don't say, hey, put your money into a fluid market that might not work. I mean, like, there was no warning that this was going to crash all the time until it started crashing all the time. Everyone's like, this fucking sucks. And then the guy was like, hey, it might take 2 years for this to actually get normal.
I mean, that is what beta software is like, but I'll agree with you insofar as...
Then they should put out a warning don't put a lot of money in there.
The question this year about Ethereum is like, is some real shit going to arrive? And I think we can both agree it has not arrived.
Okay. Did you that's a very good way to put it. Did you think real shit was going to arrive this year?
I was thinking like in the second half of the year, maybe it would. I wasn't thinking it would be arriving by New Year's, but I thought the market would cool off around 10,000, kind of flatline, and like there'd be so much money out there. Because the way it felt a year ago was, holy God, as Ethereum gets more and more valuable, these huge ICO stores, these people who thought they were going to have to build something with $20 million have $200 million to build stuff with. How can they fail to produce anything? And this year has been them failing to produce anything.
Yeah, maybe because they no longer have any incentive to build
anything. Well, to be fair, the biggest projects that had the biggest opportunity were not the Augurs and the consumer products. There were these decentralized exchanges, these projects that were going to be more tokens generated, etc. Whether those have succeeded or failed, I feel like it's just a can that keeps getting kicked further down the line. I would have no way to know, like, is 0x a success?
No, I know. I mean, it hasn't launched, really.
Yeah. So it's, again, wait.
Or, like, remember that thing that we did a deep dive on at the Basement Tapes Polka Dot where, like, we literally could not figure out what it did?
Yeah, and then they got hacked, like, immediately afterwards. So of the three currencies, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Ethereum, two were basically flat for the year. Bitcoin Cash opened at about 555, and it's sitting at about 500 and some odd bucks right now.
Is that what it's at?
Yeah. And Bitcoin doubled over that year. Bitcoin went from 3,000 and something to 6,000 and something, depending on when you're listening to this. So is it possible that this year is about the success of Bitcoin?
I think what we are seeing is that there is a floor to Bitcoin, and that floor is about half as high as it was a year ago, which means that two times as many people are not going to sell, are hodlers, you know, and that they believe in it. And if that is the one real response, like, of all this craziness, if like what has happened is that the number of hardcore hodlers has doubled,
yeah,
I would say that that's not bad for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But it's also not that great that that's the only thing that sort of happened, because I don't think that on the tech side or anything like that, that you, or even on like the fintech side where, you know, you have financial products, it's hard to imagine that there's like some really great news other than that.
Okay, let me give a cultural example of why I do think you could say this was Bitcoin's year. When we came in, there was a general attitude among new people of like, Bitcoin's too slow. Like, if you think the whole market's going to do well, you might as well buy a bunch of alts because they're going to go like turbo well if Bitcoin does well. And the narrative was Ethereum's the real thing. Ethereum's like the internet's money. Bitcoin is like the kind of like, this is like your granddaddy's thing.
Yeah.
And generally, I would say everyone was kind of betting against Bitcoin, or at very least looking at Bitcoin as the like safe end of their portfolio.
Year ago? Yeah. I totally agree.
And now Bitcoin basically trounced everything over the course of that year, has reasserted its dominance, is over 51% now of the overall share of crypto. You know, a dark horse narrative to follow up here is like, what if Bitcoin runs up to 80% dominance here? What if it just pushes out all of these other coins?
I think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I think that these other coins, like that's something that I wanted to talk about in terms of the year perspective, which is altcoins.
Yeah.
And these sort of periodic alt springs that we had.
And fake alt springs.
I think that all it really takes is somebody like basically emailing or calling one of these offices where a lot of these shitcoins are and like trying to see if anyone ever answers a phone.
Yeah.
To figure out that a lot of them don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
They are traded, you know? They have a white paper, their website you can go to, probably hasn't been updated in a while. But I bet a lot of those aren't real projects anymore.
Do those really occupy any market share? I mean, isn't most of the market share in the like Dash than the IOTAs and those top 10 coins anyway?
Are we sure that those coins, if we call those,
there is someone at the office.
That someone will pick up the phone.
There's someone printing t-shirts and stickers. You know, the Bitmain is big Dash holders too.
I think that like, that everything that's shit, you know, is already dead. Like, I just can't imagine. Our friend Doug Kim, who is in the Waves Hall
of
Fame.
Are you including Sumo in that?
Yes. Yeah, and Ryocoin. Ryocoin, I've decided, is actually shittier than Sumo Coin.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, something, a project like Waves, which our friend Doug Kim owns probably the biggest bag in the world of.
Yeah.
Like, I asked Doug, I was just like, why do you think someone is actually working on this project? Like, what evidence do you have? And he's like, well, you know, the Discord and the so-and-so. I'm just
you're being too hard on Waves. Waves has like a whole community. They've got like, there's all kinds of, there's like a whole team of people in Russia. It's a startup. What are you, they're not going to like blow up the world. They're just like chugging along.
No, but I think that, okay, I don't want to cause Doug grief, but I think my point being that a lot of volume is in a lot of alts right now that don't really exist, and that at some point it might bleed out of those, or it might not, you know, it might just be dead money. But I think that for that reason alone, Bitcoin's dominance will go way up in the next few months. And I don't think that because I think the ICO craze has settled down a little bit, people aren't as incentivized to go out and just like invest in insane coins and try and pump them up. And I think that crypto money will sort of slowly go back into Bitcoin.
I think that people are looking, are going to start looking for what is the Google of crypto? Like, what is the, like, what is the, like, what's going to become like stock big here?
Like a security.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You can make a bet that Bitcoin is like too big to fail now, or it's just like, it's got like enough momentum that it's not just going to go away. I feel like the biggest question that was never answered for me during this whole year was like, if I buy some of these alts, what am I buying? Yeah. Like, I understand what it means to own one Bitcoin. I'm a little unclear what it means to own some of these ERC-20 tokens that I own, and what it entitles me to, and what's the long-term strategy in holding them. And I think it's going to be hard for them to have any like real like power outside of being correlated to Bitcoin or Ethereum and slowly giving up market share probably to both, unless it like is like, no, you really want these utility tokens.
So follow-up question to you about alts, right?
Sure.
Which is, do you think that it was bad for crypto in general to have this alt explosion? Like, do you think it was bad for crypto to have people like you and me who were interested in crypto, who are not very bright, you know, and are bad at investing, sort of signing on to 15 different exchanges and chasing these dumb coins around in the hopes of like hitting a moonshot and getting rich? Like, do you think that that was bad in general for A, the crypto community, but B, like sort of how seriously crypto is taken by real investors?
No, I don't. I mean, I think it's hard to know what the next direction of things is. At one point, it seemed like Ethereum was the next direction, and like Bitcoin was kind of like bad for the narrative, and like people buying like Silk Road drugs was bad.
That's true.
I think the sort of moralistic good bad axis breaks down pretty quickly. It's basically a...
Well, I meant not good or bad morally. I just meant bad for the health of the projects and the health of the economy.
Well, I think rather than whether it's good, healthy or unhealthy, I see it as like a pendulum that's swinging back and forth. And I think the ecosystem just experimented with being less than 50% Bitcoin and giving up a bunch of the stage to the rest of these projects. Didn't work out. Now
definitely did not work
didn't
out.
Work out. Yeah. They didn't sell themselves. Like, they got their shot. They got pumped way beyond what they justifiably could be.
Some people
valued
got very
at.
Rich.
Some people got rich, but overall, a bunch of people basically stole each other's Bitcoin. Mostly, I think a lot of people buying that were people who made a lot of money on Bitcoin, were going deep into alts, and a lot of people shuck each other down. As usual, the winners were Binance, you know, exchanges that like made tons of money listing all of these coins. It's a bit like I was talking to Chris Dannon, my friend who does mining, and he was like, in China, actually owning alts is just considered stupid. But there are all these companies that will like provide support for your new coin that gets launched onto an exchange for a fee. All these people, anyone who's smart just wants to participate in the alt ecosystem in a way that it's taxing it. Yeah. I'm not convinced there's a bunch of people who see a 10-year value in any of these smaller alts.
Yeah, they're just drug dealers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just like, listen, I don't do heroin, but there's a whole lot of people who do. And it's a good business to be in, you know?
Yeah.
Like they don't, I mean, this it's not. That I mean, that makes, that is both very interesting to me, but it also makes a ton of sense because you look at something like Binance and you're like, well, wow, it really scaled very quickly. It works pretty well, you know, despite they had some hiccups, but it was like such huge volume that it was hard to imagine that they wouldn't. But it's not like it ever seemed like there was like some sort of like gospel that was coming out of those types of exchanges, you know. It was just like, well, they provide a service and then they made like $1 billion or whatever they made. And so like, why would you mess with that? Why would you, you know, go in and play? You know, like there are these poker games around New York City, right? And they take massive rakes, which means they take money out of each pot.
These are like the poker games that are on the like 14th floor of some office building and you get off the elevator and there's just a game.
Yeah. And sometimes the guys who run the games will play in them, you know?
Yeah.
But they're only really just doing that because they're bored. Like, they're not trying to win the money, you know? Like, the actual money is in the fucking game and in the rake. And you can make tens of thousands of dollars a night doing this, you know? But some people confusingly think, like, oh, they just want to set up these games with fish in them because they're good players. And then they'll take advantage of it and they'll play and be like, absolutely not, dude. It's the $4 every single hand or the $25 every single hand that is taken out of the pot that you just won. That's what matters. They're just fucking bored, you know? Or they want the game to be more lively. And sometimes these guys will come in and play bad on purpose so that the other guys, you know, there's more money being spread around because they don't care. It's like worth the investment for them if those same people come back day after day after day because they think that the game is better than it actually is. So I think with you know, the alt economy in China or whatever, yeah, that makes sense to me. They're the guys running the game. They're the ones taking the rakes.
And we knew that alt trading was basically a video game. The question was in my mind was, is it a video game that's going to get bigger and bigger stakes and getting more and more lucrative? Or is it basically just a way to milk money out of people and pull it back into Bitcoin? And the ultimate value is probably accruing to Bitcoin.
What do you think?
I think it's the latter. And I think a lot of that value, as we're seeing with places like Bitmain holding Bcash, some of the huge amounts of money these companies are making is being held in crypto. And they have a tremendous amount of power politically over the future of these coins because these hoards they're holding, be it Bitmain, Binance, all these companies have a lot of crypto coins, like maybe 10, 20% of the world's supply.
All right. So we're one year out, right?
Yeah.
So 1 year after the beak, like another thing I wanted to talk about in terms of like anniversaries.
That was so weird when I said crypto coins. Some of these guys have tons of crypto coins.
It's like
next time someone asks me like what I do, I'm like, I host a crypto coin podcast.
Do you we started this podcast as optimists, right?
You were like neutral and I was optimistic, and now I'm neutral and you're pessimistic.
I don't think you're neutral. I think you're pessimistic, and I'm like
extremely pessimistic.
Yeah, I'm extremely pessimistic.
Yeah, we've both been disillusioned. This show has basically been a coming of age story, as like the wool's been pulled off of our eyes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an existentialist French novel. We have learned that the world is all suffering. My question to you was like, when we were both very optimistic, when we thought Bitcoin was the future, which we both did.
Yeah.
Or a future, not the future. Can you articulate right now, as Bitcoin is at 6,000 and Ethereum is crashing and our portfolios are like laughably bad? Can you articulate still what that vision was? Like, what did you think was going to happen?
I thought, and I still think, that a bunch of the money that's held in national currencies, people would prefer to hold in some nationless internet purely digital reserve, and that reserve, as more and more people want to buy into it, will be worth more and more. And I don't think that hypothesis has been proven wrong. If we had just bought Bitcoin when we were first interested and never done anything else and never changed our position,
we'd be up 2x.
We'd be up 2x. So how can you say that like that hypothesis about Bitcoin has been proven wrong? It's like, oh, it only went up like 2x in like 14 months.
I didn't say it was proven wrong.
No, I feel like we're so negative. Like it feels like we're at a funeral, but it's 2x over that period. The problem is we played it terribly as usual.
Well, okay. So it's not, we're not, to be clear, I would say that we're not bemoaning Bitcoin's funeral.
Yeah.
We're bemoaning our own funeral.
Yeah. And crypto, look, everything else should be ashamed of itself.
Yeah.
It's a funeral for Ethereum to be worth the same amount 1 year later.
All right. So to answer my own question, I will say that I thought that there was some chance, maybe a 1% chance or a 2% chance, right? That some country, large country, would convert their entire economy over to Bitcoin.
I totally thought that too.
And that there would be, at that point, a real testing of whether or not there could truly be a decentralized currency that not only was being used by like people on the dark web, but could be used for anybody who didn't want to buy into state bank power.
Yes.
I never thought that the entire world would go over to cryptocurrency or the entire internet would be.
We're talking about like a Venezuela, Zimbabwe.
Yeah, like a small country.
Yeah.
With a small economy.
Yes.
But that there would be some inflection point where a political event would lead to some proof of concept that would allow for people like yourself or I, who don't necessarily enjoy spending a lot of money or are interested in other types of anarchic systems, to participate at some level in that system.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that you and I have to go, are able to go to like a anarchic coffee shop in Williamsburg around here and buy a coffee.
I don't want to go to that coffee
shop. Yeah, I don't want
to
go to that coffee shop either. But what it does mean...
Are you talking about the Park Slope Food Co-op right now?
Oh my God, definitely not. They're the last ones.
They should tokenize.
They're the last ones. By the way, their token would be very popular, but they're the last ones who would think to do that. But you know, like I thought that there would be some future in which maybe you or I could do something like, oh, I don't know, like rent an apartment with cryptocurrency or something like that, you know, or that there would be listings that were like, we take crypto.
That's coming though. No,
it might still come.
Yeah.
You know? But that was my best case scenario, and that I thought that probably Bitcoin's price at that point would shoot up because then people would be projecting that the whole world is going to go to crypto.
Yeah.
I also thought that there was a chance that people would start building dApps and that they would start building products on top of Ethereum that were really exciting and that were really interesting and that use smart contract technology in a way that started to prove that old systems did not really necessarily have to work. So like something like flight insurance, which they tried, you know?
Yep.
Or something that is a small transaction that requires no intermediary really, that there would be small amounts of proof leaking out that this was working. And that, I will say, of everything that happened in last year is the most disappointing to me.
Yeah,
like Ethereum has been more disappointing to me than Bitcoin by far. Like, Ethereum, the only thing that happened was that a bunch of fucking scammers made a whole bunch of fucking ERC-20 shit coins, you know, flooded the market with a bunch of nonsense, you know, and a bunch of coins, completely converted and destabilized the idea of mined coins themselves, you know, and the sort of elegance of that. And there's nothing good that came out of any of it, you know? And I think that, you know, Vitalik has been actually also a pretty shitty leader in all of this, because all he does is fucking whine on Twitter, you know? Like, there's no actual leadership to Ethereum. Like, he just, like, gets in these dumb Twitter fights. And I think that he needs to, at some point, show somebody something that is actually real, you know? And not just talk in abstract terms about what it is. There's no fucking product, you know? Put out a product.
Well, before crypto was crypto, I feel like VR was crypto. And Magic Leap is just starting to like show its like eye goggles now.
Yeah.
After, you know, blowing like their like $10 billion valuation.
Yeah.
It's like people are like, yeah, they're kind of cool. They're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
You know, Google probably like blew double that on Google Glass.
Yeah.
Which was a failure.
God, do you remember seeing people in New York wearing Google Glass?
Shit mostly fails. Like Google Glass, like most things are like, yeah, that was interesting. I'll remember that. I still remember Google Glass forever, but didn't work. And I think we have to ask now, how many years of this not working do you think people will put up with?
Ethereum?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, look, in the case of VR, I think it will eventually arrive. And I think even though it's a disappointment right now, it still makes sense to keep.
I'm still bullish over on VR.
Yeah, yeah, people are still going to keep investing in it. The next Magic Leap is going to be able to raise money to do some other crazy shit, and it's going to get better and better.
Yep.
And so far, the next Ethereum, the EOSes, the Tezoses, the 0Xs have been able to raise huge amounts of money, and people are clearly willing to keep try this playbook. I guess I'm wondering, with a 1 year whiff in front of us and a commensurate price flat line, how long can it go on like this without something to show, do you think?
Oh, I think they're like approaching the Rubicon quickly.
Mm.
And the reason why I think that is because if the price, and this is close to what you were saying before, which, you know, I disagreed with at the time, but
in reality,
well,
now.
No, I mean, I was really just being argumentative at first. I mean, I generally agree with
you. You're hot from a previous take.
Yeah.
We can't air condition here while we're taping. Hard to cool Jay down after a particularly hot take.
If the price continues to go down.
Sure.
Under 200, let's say.
Wow.
Which is not outside of the realm of possibility right
absolutely
now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We could talk about it.
There's almost nothing that saves. At that point, I think that the whole thing is dead.
Wow.
Because I don't see what turns it around. There is not a core group of people who believe that the only way to create a better world and a just world is through Ethereum, right? In the same way that there is through Bitcoin. There is no group of people who have basically decided the entire world should run off Ethereum in the way that there is for Bitcoin, you know? There is not the same years-long history of the cryptocurrency or the myth of Satoshi Nakamoto the way that there is with Bitcoin. I would say that really the biggest problem that Ethereum has going for it going forward is that its greatest strength for the first year and a half was Vitalik. You know, this is me doing sports talk radio, like WEEI and basically
flaming. And when we come back, we'll tell you what Vitalik has to do to save Ethereum.
I would say that Vitalik right now is the biggest problem with Ethereum.
He's definitely, of all the figures we've named this year, I do think he had the worst year. I think what he's trying to do is fundamentally harder. I think smart contracts are not twice
is
as hard.
Working on this shit, we never know.
I don't really understand how this DApp Ethereum amusement park world is supposed to self-organize. I think this real narrative of this year, Jay, when it comes down to it, is about me and you becoming Bitcoin maximalists.
Yeah.
We came in pretty making some snide comments, kind of sarcastic. And I think we both find its politics and underlying ethos somewhat horrifying. But I think we're pragmatically, truly Bitcoin maximalists. I think we both have a begrudging respect for its rationality and its single-mindedness.
Yeah, it's when you're faced with two choices and one of them requires you to sort of live horribly and squalidly in a place that you hate, but at least you know it's real, you know?
Yeah.
At least Bitcoin maximalism is an ethos. It's real. And we can see a future in which it can take over. And we probably would not want to live in that future. However, we believe that the people who are behind Bitcoin believe in that future. There's nothing real about Ethereum right now. I with Vitalik, it's just all he does, as far as I can tell, is tweet.
Yeah.
And go to conferences.
What else do you expect him to do, though? Sit down and start, coding, sharding himself?
At least sit with the people who are doing that, try and build a product, hype something, talk about, do something other than just fight with people online. That's all he does. How many tweets did Vitalik put out this year in which he was complaining to Twitter about Twitter? That was, half his fucking feed, which is just hey, you need to stop the scammers on here, There's no vision for anything. It's a guy literally sitting there on his phone, texting all day long, tweeting, getting mad at Twitter because it doesn't work the way that he wants it to, and there's nothing else. And that is really bad for Ethereum, and I think everybody else kind of knows it.
Well, I think he's in a tough position. To compare him to another person who probably should get off Twitter, Elon Musk does not project confidence to me on Twitter. But I do believe he has a plan in what he's doing, and all he has to do is just tell people and they're going to do that plan.
Yeah, but Elon Musk has released things. He did all the Boring Company stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to. It's it's easier to be an architect in China. You just say, we're tearing down those houses and we're building this, and there's no regulations. Yeah. You just go for it. And that's what Elon Musk can do within Tesla. He can just acquire a Solar City. He can just say, we're going private at 420 and regulators be damned. And my lawyers are going to have to clean this up. He just does it. Vitalik is not the CEO of the entire Ethereum amusement park. He is the leader kind of the Ethereum project, which is this sprawling, decentralized, all of these tokens are built on top of it. I think it's a much harder place to govern. I think that, like, we've seen that a decentralized currency can work, but we haven't seen that, like, a massive, sprawling, decentralized, open source project of the Ethereum kind can really work from an organizational standpoint. And right now it feels stalled out.
Okay, then he should publicly recuse himself.
Oh, yeah?
From leadership.
Just stab himself with a sword?
No, but just say, like, look, I'm moving on to another thing.
Yeah.
And I believe in Ethereum, but I think my presence is doing more harm than good. And the reason why I would feel that way is because I can't tell you over the past 6 months one thing that Vitalik has done that's good for Ethereum.
Okay. So we've talked about several projects that have not done well over the course of this year. What has impressed you, and what do you think? Who are the winners of this year in crypto?
Jihan Wu, CZ from Binance.
Yep.
And Saifedean Ammous and the Bitcoin maximalists, because they were vindicated.
Yeah, I have to say that I don't like in the same way I don't like to be like, yeah, the Yankees have a good team this year. I don't like that the carnivores and the
the anarcho capitalists,
Jordan Peterson fans who were previously trolling Jay were right, but they were right about Bitcoin. And I think they had a great year.
Yeah.
And I rang the bell for them. I think to me, the winner is also CZ from Binance, because we went into the year thinking Coinbase was ground zero mecca for all things crypto. And when the big spotlight was shined on Coinbase in the first run up, it was constantly crashing. And then it was involved in weird, shaky politics around adding new coins. It definitely was not a firm, solid year for Coinbase, particularly, I think, because Brian Armstrong is clearly a ETH head.
Yeah.
But really is backing ETH, and ETH had a bad year. If ETH was running the world right now, Brian Armstrong would be perfectly placed. And I think he made the right bet. I actually think he was canny there. But
sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Yeah. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. And I'm not sure we need some American Coinbase-esque company. Maybe the future is some kind of a Binance-like solution, or going even further than that into decentralized exchanges. So anything else over that year you didn't get to talk about?
No, I think I'm okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I thought we were going to talk a lot about price, but you don't really remember price per se. You remember the narrative and how it felt at each of these moments. And, there's a term in, the Renaissance in the ancient world. They speak of, the seculum, which is the span of time from right now until everyone who's alive right now, who's experiencing the events of right now, dies out.
Yeah.
So we're at the very tail end of the seculum of the Holocaust right now in World War II.
That's really? Why
yeah. Well, there's still people who are alive during World War II who are alive.
No, but it seems like we've got 20 more years of that.
But people who have a real strong memory, or people who, say, fought in World War II, we're reaching the end of the seculum of the soldiers of the Second World War.
And definitely of people who lived through World War I.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think of the seculum of various crypto buyers and people who are crypto interested. And I think the seculum of people who got in when we got in or before us is still ultimately optimistic. If you just held some Bitcoin, you did okay. But if you started messing around with some exotic alts, fretted terrible, and that's where I am. But I can't really blame anyone except myself for that. If you're from the seculum that started after that August,
you're higher up into the bull run,
I think you're just fuck this shit.
Yeah.
And that's a story I want to keep our eye on, is did we kill off a whole generation of new buyers who were just that was the dumbest shit I ever did. I lost half my money. I never had a good period. And also maybe it was market manipulation in the first place that I was buying at 15,000 or whatever.
Those people, I think we can conclude two things. The first is that definitely did happen to a large number of people, right?
Yeah.
And the second thing I think we conclude is those people are never coming back. But
I think some of those people are still hate listening to this show, but they're definitely not. They're not buying.
They're not going
to. They're not buying right now when they actually should probably be buying. This was the buy.
First of all, I really disagree that you should be buying right now.
Well, this would be the buy the dip. Like if you were like a previous buy the dip person, this is about as big a dip as you could imagine.
I would not be buying right now. This is not buy. This is not investment advice. But I would not be buying right now.
Well, they're definitely not buying.
It is interesting to think about it in generations like that. I tend to agree with you that the people who bought when we bought probably understand the technology a little bit better. They're a little more curious about it, and they have a vision in the way that you and I have a vision, however flawed or stupid, of what adoption was going to look like, you know? And the people who bought at $15,000 were coming in based purely on price frenzy. And so they don't even really think about crypto as much. And so it's easier for them to dismiss it, I think. Now, does that mean in the end that we are smarter than them or that we're more thoughtful than them?
Definitely not.
It might actually be that we're occupying more of our brains with something completely stupid.
I mean, also, if it just keeps going down from here, we can just add ourselves to the like worst generation and just say, yeah, we bought like at a high. Bitcoin's not worth that much. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm a little surprised to not see FOMO Kang out for sub $300 Ethereum out here, but I guess he wants a better price.
FOMO Kang is going to come when Bitcoin hits $3,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, right, because FOMO Kang is a maximalist now.
Yeah.
He's like a quasi no coiner, but he's like, if I will eat steak and like diet on Bitcoin.
Yeah. FOMO Kang is slowly weeding vegetables and grains out of his diet.
Very good. Well, I'll keep my eye on that. Let's hope we're still doing this in one more year, huh?
Wait.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, August 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $6,080.
Thank you so much for listening to Coin Talk. I am Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. Our editor is James Nicholson. Our partners in all this is Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. That includes transcripts if you'd like to perhaps read back into the archive of the show. If you'd like to sponsor the show or maybe send us a mailbag question, it's hi@cointalk.show. We've been getting some great emails. They're very much appreciated. Help keep our spirits up during this cold, dark, bare winter. We'll be back soon.